Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Crimson Playhouse podcast. I'm your host, Crimson Renee, and today we're diving into chapter 5 of The Velvet Muse. But before we get into the good stuff, let's catch you up real quick. When we met Liza Thornberry in chapter 1, she had just pulled into Baywood Heights and came face to face with the crumbling legacy of her late father's club, the Velvet Muse. She stepped back into a space full of dust, memories, and emotional landmines, including her ex-fiancé, Mason Harris, who showed up with his clipboard, his renovation crew, and a whole lot of tension. Mason had stirred up more than just construction noise. Apologies were made, feelings were exposed, and Liza was left reeling. Enter Maxwell Hayes, smooth, charming, and soulful, with a saxophone slung over his shoulder and eyes that don't miss a thing. Between Maxwell's easy confidence and Mason's unresolved intensity, Liza's world is officially getting complicated. And now in chapter 5, sparks fly, boundaries blur, and Liza finds herself caught between rebuilding her father's dream and figuring out what she truly wants. Trust me, you don't want to miss this one. But before we dive in, make sure you like, subscribe, and if you haven't already, join us over on Patreon. You'll get early access to episodes, bonus chapters, and a deeper look into these characters and their world. Plus, you know, it helps keep the lights on over here at the Playhouse. The link is in the description, or just head on over to patreon.com/crimsonplayhouse. All right, let's dim the lights, press play on the heartstrings, and step back into the world of the Velvet Muse. This is chapter 5. Chapter 5. The morning sun filtered through the dusty windows of the apartment, casting a warm glow on the floorboards as I stirred awake. I had no choice but to shake off the emotional fog Mason's words had left me in. You might be used to being the one doing the leaving. The sting of it hadn't dulled overnight, but today wasn't about him. Today was about taking back control. I gathered my hair into a sleek high bun, smoothed down my edges, and finished the look with a swipe of glossy lip balm. My oversized sweatshirt and leggings were the perfect armor, comfortable, familiar, and just enough to make me feel like myself. One final glance in the mirror, and I headed downstairs, each creak of the wooden steps a reminder of how much history this place held, and how much of it I wasn't ready to face. The club was silent when I opened the door to the main floor, the calm before the day's storm. I exhaled and got to work, disappearing into the back room to organize boxes of forgotten memories. Old menus, receipts, sheet music with my dad's handwriting scrawled in the margins. They were remnants of a time when this place had thrived and my dad's laughter had echoed off the walls. I couldn't afford to lose those memories, no matter how painful some of them had become. By mid-morning, the sound of boots on the floor and muffled voices signaled that Mason and his team had arrived. I stilled myself, pushing down the swirl of emotions that threatened to surface, and stepped out the back room. Mason was by the stage, clipboard in hand, directing one of his workers. When he saw me, he gave a curt nod, his expression as unreadable as ever. I returned the gesture without a word and busied myself dusting down surfaces, pretending the tension between us wasn't suffocating. Later that afternoon, Maxwell showed up with 2 smoothies and a bag of pastries, his smile as easy and warm as the sunlight streaming through the windows.
"Peace offering," he said, holding out a smoothie with a playful grin. "Thought you might need a pick-me-up."
I accepted it reluctantly, narrowing my eyes. "What are you apologizing for?" He shrugged, taking a sip of his own smoothie.
Nothing in particular. Just figured I'd stay on your good side.
Mercy appeared from behind the bar, her eyes lighting up at the sight of the pastries.
Maxwell, you really know how to win people over.
He winked at her.
I try.
Then, turning back to me, he asked,
So, what's the plan for today?
Lighting, I said, motioning toward the fixtures above the stage. The whole system needs to be rewired.
Sounds like a blast. Mind if I stick around?
Maxwell teased. I raised an eyebrow. Don't you have a job? Mercy, ever the instigator, smirked.
Liza, he's a world-touring saxophonist. The man plays in sold-out venues.
Heat crept up my neck.
Oh, I muttered. Sorry, I didn't realize.
Maxwell chuckled, his gaze warm and forgiving.
Don't be. I like that you say what you think.
Marcy nudged me. Let him stay. You could use the company. I shot her a look, but didn't argue. Fine. Just don't get in the way. Maxwell grinned, leaning closer.
Getting in the way isn't really my style, but charming the boss, that I can do.
The rest of the afternoon passed in a blur of sawdust, ladder climbing, and the occasional burst of laughter, mostly thanks to Maxwell. He was good at lightening the mood, cracking jokes, and making sure Marcy and I weren't too buried under the weight of our tasks. Even when I micromanaged him while he wrapped the original light fixtures my dad picked out in bubble wrap, he never lost his patience. Careful, I said for the 10th time. These can break. Maxwell raised an eyebrow, his smile teasing.
You sure you don't want to come over here and do it yourself?
I crossed my arms, but a small laugh escaped. Don't tempt me. He held up his hands in mock surrender.
Message received, boss.
But even Maxwell's charm couldn't drown out the silent, brooding presence of Mason. At one point, while I was perched on the ladder adjusting the fixture, he passed by and muttered,
Be careful up there.
I glanced down, surprised by the concern in his tone. I'm fine, I said, sharper than I intended. He didn't respond, just kept walking, his jaw tight, leaving me to wonder why he just couldn't stay out of my head. By evening, Maxwell had left, promising to return tomorrow, and Marcy was gathering her things near the bar. Don't stay too late, she warned with a knowing smile, slinging her bag over her shoulder. As I tidied up, a stack of old photos buried under some menus caught my attention. I flipped through them, smiling at the familiar faces, until one photo stopped me cold. Mason and I, here at the Velvet Muse, years ago, during its golden age. We were both laughing, his arms slung around my shoulders, my head tilted back in carefree joy. This picture was taken a week before he had proposed to me, in this very spot. The memory hit me like a punch to the gut. I could still hear the echoes of that night, the music, the warmth, the way he kissed me under the stage lights when no one was looking. But the memory didn't stop there. My mind spiraled to the night everything fell apart. The shouting, the accusations, the loneliness. I remembered sitting alone at anniversaries, at weddings, waiting for a man who never showed up because work always came first. I tucked the photo into my pocket, my hands trembling. When I turned, Mason was standing by the stage.
Why are you still here?
My voice came out sharper than I intended.
Finishing up,
he said simply, not meeting my gaze.
You got a whole team for that. You don't have to stay.
He finally looked up, and when our eyes met, the tension between us snapped.
Neither do you,
he said, his voice low. My frustration bubbled over.
You've always been like this. You don't care about anyone else as long as you're working.
Mason's jaw clenched, but he didn't interrupt. I kept going, the years of pent-up resentment spilling out. Do you know how many nights I sat alone, wondering if you'd even remember to come home? Do you know how humiliating it was to show up at weddings and birthdays by myself? I spent our anniversaries alone, Mason. Alone. And you didn't care. His voice was steady but raw. You think I didn't care? You think I wanted to miss those nights?
What else am I supposed to think?
I demanded. You made it clear where your priorities were. He stepped closer, his tone sharper. I was trying to build something for us. You think I enjoyed working 16-hour days? Missing those moments? I hated it, Liza, but I had to.
Tears pricked at the corners of my eyes.
You didn't have to. You chose to. Silence fell between us, heavy and suffocating.
Mason exhaled, his expression softening.
You think I didn't love you, but everything I did was because I did.
My breath hitched. Then why did it feel like you were leaving me behind? He didn't answer. Instead, he stepped back, and I saw the moment his wall was back in place.
Good night, Liza.
He said quietly before turning and walking out the door. That night, as I locked up the club, Maxwell's warmth and Mason's lingering presence weighed on my mind. One man was offering me a new beginning. The other was dragging me back to a past I hadn't fully healed from. I wasn't sure which direction to follow. But one thing was certain. This wasn't over. Not even close.
Whew, that was chapter 5. Thank you so much for listening. If you're loving The Velvet Muse, please take a moment to like this episode, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs a little romance in their ears. And if you're craving even more, bonus scenes, early access, and deep dives into character backstories, come and join us on Patreon. That is where the extended universe lives. And I'd love to welcome you to the Play Club. That's at patreon.com/crimsonplayhouse. But all right, my loves, that's it for this week. Don't worry, we've got more music, more mayhem, and so much more story coming your way. I'm Crimson Renee, and this has been the Crimson Playhouse podcast. See you next week.